This episode of the Scottish Watches podcast is brought to you by eBay. Listen out later in the show to hear from Tarath, who was last in the podcast in September, and he's back today to tell us all the latest news about eBay's authenticity program and the new services they're offering for watch buyers and sellers. Welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. We've got Dave Sharp with us on the line from Red Bar and Scottish Watches. How are you doing, Dave?
Dave is doing fine. Dave's looking at himself in the camera that we're using to record this as well, and I look like I've been dragged through a hedge backwards.
You do. You look like you've had as good a weekend as I've had.
Rough.
That's what the wee dog with no hind leg said when he pulled himself across some sandpaper. And that's the cleanest joke we're going to get out of me today. So how are things? How are you getting on?
That bit could probably stay in, unlike some of the stuff from the last recording.
Do you think we should do what Jerry Springer did? Because I was watching some stuff, Vice Motherboard, have a series on YouTube. Here we go, right into the weeds, straight off the bat. And they did a thing about how Jerry Springer changed talk shows forever in the 90s. Uh-huh. And he actually sold VHS tapes of the things that were too hot for TV. Do you think we could do like an MP3 that we sell through Patreon or something, where we've got all the offcuts that don't make it to the show?
We better make sure we charge enough that it'll be able to afford our bail by the time that the cops are going to get their hands on it.
That's a good point.
Let's get a go.
Yes. So what are you wearing on the rest of the day?
I have been wearing for a couple of days Mont Blanc. It's the Geosphere. It is the bronze one with the green dial that I've had for a couple of years now. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, must be actually. Coming on to 2.5 years, something like that. Ricky, what may you have adorning your wrist this evening?
Today on the wrist, I have got a loaner, but it's a loaner that it's going straight back, unfortunately, because it's sold. And this is the new Tudor Bronze. This didn't come from Tudor because we don't have the same contacts that Adrian at Bark and Jack does just yet. But he's working on trying to fix that for us. Nope, this came from Jonathan through at the Edinburgh Watch Company. He got this almost immediately when it was released, and he's already got somebody waiting to pick it up, but they know fine well that I'm having a play with it first, so all is good in the universe. I think it is a fantastic watch. It wears well. It wears small, because I was trying to explain this to some people. I've got the Omega Apollo 8, which is nearly 45 mil. It's like 44 and a half. Right. And I've got the Tudor Black Shield Ceramic, which is 42 mil. But because they're black, and people know if you wear a little black dress, it makes you look skinnier and slimmer and all the rest of it. Same with a watch, because it absorbs light, doesn't reflect it. Whereas a stainless steel case or even a white watch will look bigger. And because this is bronze and it's kind of in the middle, it looks smaller than it actually is. It wears okay, looks small, and it could be doing with just a couple mil more. But no, the dial on it's lovely. Some people have said they don't like the numerals on it. But they actually didn't bother me whatsoever. The fact it doesn't have a date means it's quite a clean dial. The finishing on it is great, and that adjustment on the bracelet is fantastic. It's as good as everybody says, but it's just a shame that one had to go back, because it's not a press loaner. It's a real watch for a real person.
There we go, there we go. So actually, yeah, we've talked about that obviously before, but it's a cracking looking watch actually.
Have you seen it in real life?
I have. I've seen that. I saw one down south in the boutique. The colour of the dial is unbelievable. Unbelievable. But I like that kind of gradated browny, grey browny type dials. I've got a real kind of love for that colour, and it's not something you see a huge amount. It's funny enough actually, talking of that, because obviously this Mont Blanc I'm wearing is bronze as well. I saw the latest one, because every year, you know, they bring a new colour out or a new case material in it. And this year's one is bronze again, but it has this they call it sand, but it's like a kind of sandy, browny, golden colour. And it kind of goes from light in the centre and it darkens as it gets to the edge, like a kind of gradated dial. It's cracking. But the one big thing they've done, which I think, again, elevates the watch even more, is on the one I've got, and in the generations before, the lume is amazing, but they're printed numbers with a lume infill. But the newest version has got the numbers are applique. So it's the same numbers, the same look, but they're applique numbers. So it just gives it a little bit of height and a little bit of edging on it. And it's just another little bit that's kind of lifted that watch up.
There we go. Wrist check out of the way. Something's happening here in Scotland, which most of our listeners are not in this country, but hey, you're going to listen to us anyway. We are off to a couple of places this week. We are away to see the new IWC collection, because they've got a travelling container. Yes. If you saw the videos with Chris Granger at this year's Watches and Wonders, which was all virtual, and he did his presentation in front of the same kind of set that they use on The Mandalorian, you'd have seen these random containers in the background. I thought they were a bit odd, but it turns out these are the things that are going around where you can go check out some new watches in safety, because you're obviously not allowed to have launch events in boutiques and stores in the UK, at least, probably the same further afield. So we're off to check that out on Thursday. I think there's one in Glasgow you mentioned. We're going to the one in Edinburgh, in capital city, just opposite the castle. And then we're also going to the Omega boutique in Glasgow, because they have their travelling collection as well this week. So it's going to be a busy time going and visiting people.
Yeah, indeed. Seeing a few of the watches that most folk, including us, have actually only seen either in images or on presentations virtually. No one's really got a handle on them yet, because I think the Omega collection they've got out there is all the ones that they kind of maybe announced in the last couple of months but haven't hit retail stores yet.
But there is an Omega announcement of a watch that sort of dropped in the last couple of days. Have you had a look at this one?
Well, there is, yeah. So it's funny, I was talking with someone who is well-versed in the brand, and so they've launched a couple of, I think these might be the two final Olympic editions. So obviously last year having meant to be in Tokyo 2020, which has been pushed to this year because of, the COVID. We have the final two pieces that they've put out. These are both Aquaterras, both in a 41mm and the newer 38mm size in a gold case. So these are very blingy, pimpy. They're not limited edition, from my understanding, but they will be limited by production, and they will be limited by the fact that they're gold and expensive. They've got the nice kind of, I think there might be an Aquaterra out already in stainless that's got the same dial effect, where you've got the blue dial with the kind of geometric pattern that I think is
looks like car camouflage.
It's a bit like that Dazzle camouflage from World War One ships, isn't it? Yeah. I think that might be part of the design and kind of aesthetic of the Tokyo Olympics is where that comes from.
That's a ceramic dial as well, isn't that one, isn't it?
I believe so. I think that's correct. And also on the back, you've got the gold rotor on it. And I believe they've also got the Olympic rings engraved onto the rotor, I believe.
Are you sure about that?
Am I sure about that? Is it maybe Olympic rings on the display case back and something else engraved on the rotor?
Yeah, I think the rotor has just got kind of engine turning on it. And they've got that horrible sticker look that Grand Seiko sometimes do on the transparent case back.
Where it's almost like
it's like a sticker on the glass.
Aye, but it's just been laser etched probably onto the inside, isn't it? But it looks so, it's almost so perfect, it looks like a removable sticker.
Yep.
The
blue and the gold looks great. It's got the zirconium ceramic effect on the dial. Yeah, nothing to really dislike about it, even down to the date display at 6. I'm starting to really like displays at 6 for that symmetry uniform look. It looks great, and it's not a cutout in a rectangle or a square. They've actually made it circular. And again, that's something just a little bit different.
And I think it's what's quite nice about it is it's got it's yellow gold, so they've not used one of their Sydney golds or anything. It's a gold watch, and yes, they do gold watches, but a lot of the stuff they put out recently has been Moonshine or Sedna or I can't remember the name of it, but they do a ready gold one as well, various other colours. But this is just a straight commoner garden regular gold.
Hey, it works.
It does work. And actually, I've just looked at the price. Of course, it's expensive. It's gold, but it's not absolute lunacy. Price wise, this is US pricing, but it's about just shy of $18,000 for the 38 and about 18.5 for the 41. So that's going to probably translate back to something in the 15,000-ish UK, probably that neck of the woods. So, not absolutely mental money, considering what the gold Tudor that they announced along with the silver one is, what, I think 12,000-13,000, that neck of the woods. Really great quality watch with a chronometer certified, Meta certified Omega watch in gold. Good looking watch if someone's after something a bit blingy and a bit dressy. So yes, very nice.
Yeah, and if you're looking for something that's a bit blingy but doesn't have quite the same cost, Linda Verdlinger bag Now, we obviously had Jorn on the show earlier on this year because his brand has been a firm favourite of mine ever since I got into the hobby nearly 5 years ago. Thanks to the guys at Watchbox, especially Tim Mosso, for shining a light on the brand that doesn't get a lot of airtime nowadays. And it was just great speaking to him after seeing a couple of the pieces sent up from Pietro at the Limited Edition. Yep. They have got some new ones. They have got the Spiderlite Nord and the Octopus Nord with some new blue dials that are a little bit skeletonized, a little bit embossed. Just something a little bit different.
I really like them. But to be honest, you know, it's similar aesthetic, but it's a totally different watch. But I love the Plo Prof from Omegas, and I wear that all the time. And whilst this is aesthetically different, it's also got a lot of similarities. It's a big chunk of really nicely machined metal. And I do like this. I think it's a watch. I've seen a couple in the wild before. I think it was, can't remember exactly who it was, but I'm pretty sure it was at Red Bar Manchester. Someone had one. It's a cool looking watch, you know. They're not cheap, but they're not mental money. You know, that I think they're in that kind of I think these ones are in like an 8,000.
8 to 9, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that category. A lot of watch for the money. Something definitely a little bit left field, something a bit unusual. Certainly not something that you're going to see really anything out there in the wild that's like it. And, you know, it's going to catch the eyes of people. Good thing is, if anyone tries to kind of mug you for it, you've probably got a weapon on your wrist that you can take them out with as well. But yeah, I really like it. I think it's cool. I think it's a brand, again, like we were talking earlier, that would be nice to see them get a bit more attention and see more of them out there.
Well, Sylvia, who deals with her PR marketing, it was her that helped organise the podcast earlier this year. I'm going to hit her up and see if we can actually get a loan of one or two of these pieces.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, Pietro managed to get us a few earlier from the different ranges they already had out, but this is brand split new. So we're going to check it out. Water resistant up to 300 metres. It's got a 44x46mm sandblasted titanium grade 2 case, 15mm thick. If you look at the casing on the outside of a transmission or something in a Formula One car and you've got everything going everywhere, that's the kind of look of these guys. Quite industrialised, quite space age. It's the thinking man's Hublot.
That's a good thing that hadn't come to my mind there, which is it looks like a nice Hublot. And yep. I'm not a big Hublot fan by any stretch, but I can see where you're feeling that aesthetic, but it's way nicer looking. Again, the thing for me as well is, especially on, now which one is it? Is it the Octopus that's the one that's got the kind of more machining out on the case? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that actually reminds me back in the day of that kind of bit where, you know, like in race cars and stuff, like the home tinkerer would just start machining parts out of panels to save weight.
Weight saving.
You know, exactly, yeah. You know, like cutting bits out that aren't structural. It's got that kind of whole kind of industrial come just utilitarian look to it as well. It's great. I was just reading a wee bit there about the movements as well. So, you know, one of them, it's a Dubois de Praz calibre in it. So, you know, real nice calibres in there as well.
High
end,
so, yeah.
You know, high-end watch. Lot of watch for the money. Again, probably a watch that if it was coming out of one of the more major Swiss houses through the more traditional to market channels would be considerably more expensive than £8,000 or £9,000. Probably think about doubling it before it would get to market. So yeah, great value for what it is. Great value.
Yeah, and limited to 88 pieces as well. So you're buying into something where you're not going to bump into these. You're not going to see them for sale in the secondary market. And they actually hold their value pretty decently, some of these limited edition ones as well.
Yeah, also it looks like one of them's actually, yeah, one's 88 pieces and one's 75 pieces, it says. So
a bit of exclusivity as well.
You definitely don't see many out and about, and with that kind of number, you definitely aren't going to see many out and about, which is even better.
Well, something that you nearly never saw again was Jody from the Just One More Watch channel, because the shit has been hitting the fan on YouTube in the watch world and probably further afield, but obviously watches is what we're interested in, so we don't care about everything else. So what happened was, Jody opened his email and found a message from YouTube that basically said, "Your channel is gone. No recourse, no explain yourself, young man, of what's going on here." They didn't actually tell him much about anything as to why it disappeared. And the long and short of it was something to do with counterfeit watches. Now, Jody doesn't sell any counterfeit watches. He doesn't have any videos promoting counterfeit watches, and his video descriptions don't have any links to purchase said counterfeit watches or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's been a bit of a head scratcher, but thanks to the Watch Fam, not just the Scottish Watches Tartan Army, who he called the Scottish Watches Mafia, but he got a little bit wrong there. Due to a concerted effort between everybody that's into watches, and there's not a single person out there that I know has ever said a bad word about Jody. People hate us, people love Adrian, people hate Adrian. It's par for the course, but Jody Brody has never put a foot wrong, as far as I can tell, in the nearly 5 years that he's been on YouTube. He's done hundreds, I think it's 600 videos. Great guy. And to have his channel just taken away with no real explanation as to what he did wrong. There was no link to say it was this video or we've had a complaint from this organization. It was just, it's gone. But within 12 hours, thankfully, he got his channel back, because the first email basically said, we've looked at your channel and there's stuff on there that's terrible. You're deleted. Second email said, we've looked at your channel and everything's in good standing. So what one is it? So instead of us trying to explain what's going on, we've actually got Jody here to get the words straight from the horse's mouth. Right, Jody, what have you been up to? What have you been doing? You've been a bad boy. I mean, I know that's why we obviously kicked you out and sent to Australia. That's the usual thing we do with crims over here. But what have you done? Why have the YouTube gods been bad to you?
Well, look, I must be up to something if you're wanting to speak to me more than once a year, because I know you've only got so much love for me. It's one podcast a year. So here we are a couple of months after that. It wasn't me. It definitely wasn't me. I don't know who it was. I'm still not entirely convinced about what is or has been going on, or what is continuing to play out in the watch community over the last 10 days or so. I don't quite know. I was studying in the afternoon and I got the email at 4:30 saying your channel's gone. I just a bit sick, just a bit threw up, tried not to panic. I've got one contact who works with influencers and content creators in Australia. They're a kind of trainer. And I was on a training course last month for 4 weeks. And I contacted the one guy there that I had an email address for and then a phone number for, who spoke to somebody else who I think put in a word for me with a human being at YouTube in Singapore. And I then went home and tried to work out what I was going to do on my own. And I put out that Instagram call for support because I hear that is a good thing to do. YouTube have people monitoring channels, and you know, if you rattle enough cages, then you'll get a human. My hope was to get my appeal under the nose of a human being, on the basis that they were accusing me of promoting their terms and conditions. It's counterfeit claims, so counterfeit goods. It's for the sale or promotion for sale of counterfeit goods. And I didn't think I was contravening that at all, and I still don't. So I went to bed, had a hideous night's sleep, but woke up the next morning and my channel had been back online for 5 hours. So the whole thing was down for less than 12 hours, which just doesn't happen. People get their channels deleted and they have to go through a rigmarole beyond comprehension to try and get them back. So I'm incredibly grateful. I don't know quite how it happened, but I'm really, really grateful for the support and for, you know, the community, that everybody jumped to my aid and rattled those cages exactly as I was hoping. So just phenomenal. The next day, though, I've sent you this message as well. I got another email from YouTube saying that my Seamaster video, the fake versus real Seamaster, had been pulled. So I said in my video that I made on Tuesday, let's see what happens over the next couple of days. And indeed, that happened within another 12 hours of that happening. Now, they said it was another counterfeit claim and that I was getting a community strike on my account. On closer inspection, that hasn't happened, but I have got a warning now, which is a precursor to a strike. So I am going to appeal that exactly the same way that I appealed the termination that, hey, this isn't correct. Now, since then, I've had nothing else, no other activity. Various people have come to tell me that, oh, it's my Pagani videos, it's the homage videos that are the problem. And I've had other people still saying, look, there's something malicious going on. Jory Goodman, Time Teller T3, he messaged me yesterday saying that two of his biggest videos had been targeted and he had got takedown notices. So again, not quite as severe as what I got, but takedown notices. And I clarified with him today exactly which videos they were. And it was one that was a review of the Seagull 1963 and one was titled Don't Buy Fake Watches. So two of his biggest, you know, up there close to a million views, I believe, on each of these. So he reckons maybe it's something malicious rather than a brand that's doing it. So I initially suspected a brand. That was what I heard from some of the sort of the backdoor channels, that it could be brands who were getting agitated about having the fakes of their watches appearing on YouTube anywhere, because it could be argued that that counts as promotion. It certainly doesn't count as promotion according to the YouTube terms and conditions, which is my argument. But you know, it's not good to see how good these super clones are, is it? If you were that brand, you wouldn't be too chuffed. But that's one thing. having unrelated videos taken down on other channels. Maybe it's the same person or people. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's not connected. But I don't know. I'm no further forward, really.
Right. Well, we did hear something, like you say, in the back channels, that perhaps the reason you got targeted was one video in particular, and that was the Seamaster one, because I believe the thumbnail and the wordage used on that was, this Seamaster such and such is scarily good. This fake Seamaster is scarily good.
Probably not my finest hour, if I think about it, in terms of thumbnail.
You did not mean anything by that. And if you watch the video and you listen to the terms and the phrases that you always use, it was, do not buy this. If you've got the spare cash, you're looking for a watch, and you've got $500, buy a $500 watch. Don't buy something that's a piece of shit.
You know, it's a lie. My point with fakes is it's a lie. I don't understand why someone would spend their money on it to try and pretend they're something they're not. It doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, that's if you look at the video and get 2 minutes into the video. Mm-hmm. But I agree, the thumbnail could be construed as looking promoting, but not promoting for sale, which is what their terms and conditions state.
True. And there was no links to buy such things. Even if you listen to the first little bit of the video, it says, you know, it's don't do this. We've said it in our show, I mean, our podcast, we've said many times about your video, about even Watchfinder. They are owned by Richemont, and they have some of the had some of the biggest sort of real versus fake videos. And after your skirmish with the law at YouTube, their videos went dark.
Yeah, I think everybody's. I had a look for fake versus real when I was making my kind of reaction video, and they'd all gone.
Shock
everybody
horror.
Had pulled them down. Quite wisely, I did the same. Anything with the word fake in the title, I removed just for, you know,
safety.
Expediency for covering. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, there was a guy who posted a video, I don't know when it was posted, but I only saw it last night, and it's a channel called I Like Watches. He made a YouTube video called Ben and T3 Had More Content Deleted. I am not a lawyer and this is not legal advice, but I watched it and he's got some ideas on it. He had one of his channels deleted months ago, never got it reinstated.
Yes.
And he's got some thoughts on it. And I don't know where the thoughts come from, because he talks to the camera and says, it's because of this, 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 and this. But from what I've seen from you and other people, YouTube don't actually tell you exactly what it is. He was going on about Pagani, the motor company, obviously have got trademarks for Pagani, and then Pagani Design have got some legal battles ongoing at the moment because, you know, they're using that name. And I'm thinking, how does he know all this? How does this relate? So I don't know how much truth is in what he says or what his backup is. He didn't give his citations as to where this information came from. Then you say there's a malicious element where somebody might be out there targeting.
Potentially. I know that, Gary has suspected a few different sources in his kind of channel takedown. And I think Ben has had problems recently that he said were malicious. And it doesn't sound like T3's, it doesn't sound like there's a brand complaining about T3's videos there.
A sequel video.
Maybe, yeah, it was like why Chinese watches are better than Swiss watches, you know, which was a big, you know, clickbaity and did very well for him. It was one of his very earliest videos, as far as I remember. But yeah, that's not promoting counterfeit goods. It's just saying this is real and it costs you $200 as opposed to whatever else. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody can state categorically exactly what's happening, because as you say, I got a 4-line email at either end from YouTube. You know, I still haven't spoken to, and I'm never likely to speak to a human being to tell me, hey, it was these people, we upheld it, we reviewed it, and this is why. There's none of that, which I understand. It doesn't make it sit any better with me, but they're just so big. We're so small. It's easier for somebody who's on an 8-hour shift just to press the button and delete you and move on to their next case.
100% there. When we were only 5,000 followers on Instagram, we had our Instagram account nuked and it was an accident. And we panicked. And that was nothing. We were in our first year, I reckon. It felt like you're with your wife, you'd woke up and she'd packed her stuff and pissed off. That was the kind of empty feeling, hollow feeling. There was tinnitus in your ears. You're going, what's happened? Why has this happened? How do I fix this? What's going on? And the only way that we managed to get any motion on that is because, thankfully, I do Facebook marketing and advertising for different clients, and I had a human being at Facebook, and Rick happened to have a human being at Facebook as well, and we got in touch with that person and said, listen, we're looking to do some advertising on our Instagram account, and it has gone walkies. What's going on? And they came back and said, oh, I don't know why that is. Let me have a look at it. And within a couple of hours, it was back, and they said they fixed it.
Amazing.
But there was no reason. They couldn't. I mean, come on to hell. There's logs. there's information, there's notes and files. If something gets nuked, there should be a paper trail or a virtual paper trail that says, this was why, this is what happened, this was the action that was taken. But they never tell you anything, nothing at all. And I've heard of other people having things removed, and it's just a case of, we removed something because something was bad, and you've got 500 videos. How the hell are you meant to know what's going on?
And what made it worse with YouTube, and what makes it worse with YouTube, is it's not your channel that gets deleted. You get deleted as a person, and any other channels that you have, you're not allowed to create channels in the future under your name and address. I couldn't leave a comment on a Facebook video until my channel got reinstated that night. I couldn't log into Facebook through any of my other email accounts, any of my other Gmails. Everything was linked to me. Everything was gone. So any contingency plan that I had, and I did have one, I had a vague plan B, I had another, I was squatting another channel name just in case something like this happened, was out the window because I had no access to it at all. So I would needed to have started another account under my wife's name or, you know, Charlie Chaplin or something, and set it up that way. Who thinks that way? Who thinks that they'll need that type of plan B, because they take you down as an entity, not just your channel?
Well, this also happened to a YouTuber called Podstage, and he's brilliant if you're into audio equipment, microphones and those kinds of things. I used them when I was buying the mic that I'm using just now. He did a sort of ABCDEFG comparison between this one and loads of others, and I settled on this. He also runs a watch YouTube channel, but it's absolutely tiny because it's one of his sort of passion projects. He's into mechanical watches, and I've invited him onto our podcast, but he says he's too small to come on just yet, but he will come on. But he got his channel taken down for no reason. He still had access on one device, and he could post a message on the notifications area of YouTube. So if you're on the YouTube app and you're on the home screen and you scroll, you saw his thing, and he asked for help, and he got his thing put back. And again, he doesn't really know what's going on. But the takeaway from this is, if you speak to the man in the street or somebody whose kids love TikTok and YouTube, and you say, such and such makes their living from YouTube, they'll look at you as if you're daft, as if it's a joke, as if it's kid on. They don't understand that from 2006 onwards, YouTube has become a platform for people to have careers. It's how they make their money. Yeah. It's how you make your money. Obviously, we know you worked at the Sydney Opera House. COVID happened. That employment ended. It's back in a smaller fashion at the moment, but you make your money from YouTube. You make 3 videos a week and you don't dick around.
Yep.
The problem is, you are playing in YouTube's football stadium with YouTube's referees and YouTube's ball. And if any particular cog in their massive machinery decides they don't like you anymore, they're taking their ball and you are ejaculated from the premises. So what people have done, for instance, Linus at Linus Tech Tips, massive technology channel, has been going for many, many years. He saw the writing on the wall with us, and him and some other people created something called Floatplane, which I know very little about, apart from it is basically a YouTube for creators. Corridor Crew, Corridor Digital have done similar because they've got a massive YouTube channel, but they also know at the drop of a hat, they could have their channel taken away for copyright or whatever because they utilize little snippets. So these guys have got their own platforms where you can go, if you like what they do, and watch the videos ad-free or ahead of time or interact. It's a bit like a Patreon type system, and you can put your content up there as well. Now, obviously, people aren't going to organically find it. The algorithm that people always talk about with YouTube, where you go in and you look at one video and it says, you might like this one. That's not going to work because it's a different platform. But these things are going to have to get traction, because YouTube's policies and the way they work, there is no human interaction. There is no, well, we'll do this. It's basically judge, jury and executioner in one fell swoop. You're pulled out your bed at 4 in the morning, your head's cut off, and that's the end of that.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, there isn't really a viable alternative platform. I mean, it's like Google. Do you actually go to Yahoo or Bing or any of these things? These things still exist, but does anybody actually use them anymore? We've all given so much of ourselves and so much of our lives and so much of our privacy and our information over to these big tech platforms, and we rely on them entirely, and they don't really care about us. So yeah, we all have to be careful. Plan B, plan C, plan D, plan E are all required, but it's hard to come up with one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll definitely need to diversify where I post my content, and I need a more secure plan B. That course that I mentioned that I did, there was Australia's biggest YouTuber on there, Bounce Patrol, who have like 20 billion views. They're a kids channel. And the lady there said she has a doomsday book where she has a plan. She has her plans for all of the worst case scenarios. Someone hacks her account, someone robs her passwords, you know, all of that stuff. And I think when she said that, every creator on that course kind of took note, but I didn't quite get my doomsday book in order in the month after the course. And yeah, I'll need to do that now because I've Doomsday happened to me, and I was lucky, fortunate, perhaps not lucky, perhaps fortunate to get it back, but it could easily happen again.
Yeah, we're glad you are back.
I said plenty of thank yous in my video, but thank you again to anybody who's listening. Thank you to you and to Dave. I know you did your share as well. Thanks to everybody who helped get me back online so fast, you know, a bit of a miracle.
I've never seen so much love. The Watch community is pretty good. I keep saying it, right? You're listening to this in your headphones just now or in your car. You're part of a community that is brilliant. It is so much nicer than even the sci-fi community where people fight over, you know, canon and Star Wars and Star Trek and which is better and blah, blah, blah. You know, people love hobbies. They're quite passionate about it. But the Watch community comes together like no other. The amount of messages of support, the amount of reposts, the amount of stories. One of the guys that listens to our show, and I won't name him because he probably won't want us to say that, but he did a screen capture of all these different channels that had videos like Watchfinder had a video, like such and such had a video, and it said something along the lines of, if these guys can do it, why has Jody's channel been deleted? Yeah. You know, it's the amount of people that went to, but somebody created a change.org petition to get you back.
I know. Some French guy created a petition. He sent me an email and I said, mate, give me your address. I'll post you something. I owe you big time. But, you know, yeah, just incredible. People were chipping in money so that it could get promoted or something. I don't know how it works, but yeah, amazing. Yeah, I got 200 emails, I reckon. And I sat down yesterday and I went through them all. And I emailed everybody back and just said, look, thank you so much for thinking. Thank you for your support. Just what a difference. What a difference it made.
It just goes to show it doesn't matter what you think you're doing. If you're doing well, it can all be taken away in an instant. So do have your backup plans. No matter which industry you're in, you know, things can change. And yeah, it's best to plan ahead because we're not kids anymore. You know, life is real. And if you're making your income from something, you have to protect yourself, your family, and that roof over your head. And we're just glad that you're back, Jody. So don't fuck up again.
Thank you, Ricky. I promise I won't. You're scarier than YouTube. And if you tell me not to, then I'll listen to it.
No worries. Well, listen, we'll let you get on because I've got no idea what time it is over in, well, down under. What time is it down under?
Down under is 20 to 10 today. It's 20 to 10 on a Saturday night. So yeah, I'm in the house. We're in lockdown again. Week two of lockdown, and it's going to be a long one.
Oh, what's happened?
Oh, the Delta strain is rampaging.
What, 5 people have got it?
Well, 50 today. But yeah, they don't want it to get out of control. Nobody wants it to get out of control. So,
well, listen, it gives you loads of time to create some new content that doesn't infringe on anyone's copyrights.
It doesn't infringe copyrights. Yeah, very good, very good. I'll be hearing that one for a while, I'm sure.
You will. Excellent. Well, listen, we'll let you go, Jody. Thanks for coming on, and we'll see you again next year, all right?
Hopefully next April, unless something, you know, biblical happens to me between now and then.
Right, we'll catch you soon, buddy.
All right, see ya.
So, Dave, what do you think of that? What's your sort of thoughts on going around deleting all kinds of stuff and channels and just, you know, taking shots at everybody?
It's a hard one. I mean, trying to, I suppose, take out the fact that it's Jody and we know him and we know his channel's good. It shows you, you know, there are many folk out there, some people we know and we know well, that, you know, let's be honest, their livelihood, their mortgage, their family rely on that being their business and, you know, the kind of monetization of their content. So, you know, it's a different non-traditional way to monetize video content, but it works for people and great, good on them. But effectively for the channel, for YouTube to be able to arbitrarily just decide to take your entire livelihood out from under you and ultimately your content and your work and your hard-earned kind of time that you've put into these things away from you, not quite without recourse, but just because they decide to take it away, whether it's their algorithms or whether someone's genuinely put in a complaint, there's no kind of, it feels like there's no due process. It's just, it's gone. And then it's up to you to go fight and tell them why it was a bad decision. And yes, you can put in your, well, I think this is a bad call, can you review it? But as we've seen from, you know, some kindly shared kind of screenshots, there's nothing in there that tells you why. It's just that you've been a naughty boy or girl, goodbye. That's it. So to me, when you try to fight your corner, what corner are you fighting? Because you don't know what you've done. And if you genuinely haven't done anything, like in the case of Jody, it's like, please give me back my channel because I didn't do anything. But they obviously think you did, but they won't tell you what you think you did.
Imagine if you get taken to court, the procurator fiscal sends you a notice saying, come to court, and you turn up at court, and you don't know what it is you've done wrong.
Hi.
How are you supposed to defend yourself?
Exactly. It's like a combination of that or some kind of like kangaroo court, some kind of super injunction, which is like, you've got an injunction, but we can't tell you why you've got an injunction, or we can't even tell you the fact you've got an injunction. You know, it's that kind of nonsense. It's just, what is going on? But you know, the main thing in this case is luckily, very quickly, he got his channel back. I suppose, aside from the whole YouTube argument, it is is what it is. They are a private company. I think there's a much bigger debate to be had about that generally for people and content creators. But the other question is, if it wasn't a rogue algorithm and it was somebody putting a complaint in, to me, it strikes me as it's probably pretty nefarious in terms of who's done it. You know, I can't think of anything that he's done that would... you know, there's definitely content on YouTube for sure that companies have absolutely got the right to probably go for you because you are impinging on their copyrights or their trademarks or their IP or their name or whatever, or you're disparaging or you're saying things that, you know, are harmful to their business. Fine, that's life, that's what happens. I don't know, you know, if it's someone out there that's doing this, then yeah, that's a bigger question to ask as well. But I think the main thing is he's got his channel back, and you know, I know there's a couple of other people that have suffered in a similar way, some of them much smaller channels, and again, let's hope that, you know, the community can come together when it happens to anyone. That could so easily have been Adrian, it could so easily have been other people we know that put content out there, and you know, it's just good that the community, there are challenging people in the community. The good thing is most of the folk are pretty decent and genuine and fought his corner and will hopefully fight other people's corners when it may unfortunately happen again.
Yeah, I know Adrian, when he saw Jody's channel coming down, because we obviously all speak to each other behind the scenes, Adrian pulled his car over at the side of the road, immediately went in and started removing anything that had a sniff of counterfeit watches, his Omega videos, his Rolex one, even the one that we went out and recorded just a few weeks back where we were shooting the counterfeit watches because obviously we don't like them. Yeah. But those kind of things could fall foul of an algorithm or a check or unilateral sweep by a big brand saying, nope, we don't want any mention of it. And the only thing with Jody's videos was maybe one thumbnail where he said, this Omega fake is scarily good, which could be interpreted one way as, oh my God, watch out, these are so scarily good that you might accidentally buy one if you're buying one second hand. It could be a fake. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, it could be seen as, well, why spend $4,000 on a watch when you could spend £600 and it's like nearly just as good? So you don't know. Yeah. So we're all keeping away from that. Even Watchfinder went in and deleted their most famous and most viewed videos, which were sort of comparisons under Macro. They deleted them, obviously owned by Richemont Group as well. So they're being careful.
I can understand. Don't get me wrong. With some of the brands, like we've said, all the videos that we know of with these kind of compare the really good super clones from whoever with the real ones, they're all warning videos. Let's be honest, they're all be really, it's a case of be really careful because not everyone out there is an expert, and some of these really do pass themselves off pretty well, not pretty well,
they
extremely well.
Exactly,
you know, and you know, not everyone is an expert on movements or little nuances, but I can understand why brands might see that as, well, you know, you're showing it to people who might think, okay, I can pass it off as the real thing. At the end of the day, the person who bought it in the first place absolutely knew it was a fake. I think the problem is it's the people in the middle. You know, a lot of people will just buy stuff out of ADs or boutiques. They'll never really get caught out. Whereas the people who knowingly buy these things, it's the folk in the middle when it suddenly ends up on the secondary market that can absolutely get caught out, you know, and they're the ones I feel sorry for. But yeah, it's a tough sphere. And I suppose that's one of the dangers of YouTube. You know, you can set a channel up and, you know, these people aren't necessarily legal experts. They don't have teams behind them in other businesses of lawyers and people that can say, do this, don't do that, absolutely don't do this. You know, so sometimes, sadly, they do get caught out when they do something that is in with the best of intents, but not necessarily seen that way by brands. But hey, the main thing is his channel's back, and I think a whole load of folk have maybe, for want of a better phrase, learned a little lesson and will probably tread slightly more carefully with regards to what they do or don't put out there. So we'll see.
They will sled tritely from now on.
Sled tritely on blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
It's a Sunday evening. It's been a long weekend. But no, listen, well done, Jody, for getting it back. Thanks for coming on and explaining what's been going on, because he did do a video where he thanked so many people that lend a hand, posted things, and it was good to just get a little bit more insight into it for our audience that's maybe perhaps a little bit more technically interested. And on the side of the counterfeit stuff, we have also got another returning guest. We're now going to speak with Tarath, that was last on the show back in September, just as eBay were announcing a move forward when it came to dealing with counterfeits, fakes and dodgy dealings online. They brought in their authenticity system and guarantee. They've done a lot of things in the past. They have had a lot of things happening in the last half year, and we've got Tarath back with us today just to give us a bit of an update, because it has been quite a few months since we last spoke and many things have happened across that time. So first of all, how are things going with you, Tarath?
Ricky, great to be back on. Yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, I remember, what was it, last September, and seems like the world has definitely changed again since then. So no, things have been going great, both personally as well as eBay. A lot of very exciting times in the world of luxury at eBay, for sure.
What new things have been coming down the line, and how have the previous things been going for you guys?
Yeah, I think, remember, I think when we last spoke, we had just at that time launched our authenticity guarantee program. What that program is that all watches over $2,000 and more are meticulously inspected and verified by independent experts. So, you know, we partnered up with Stolen Company, a reputable watch service center, as well as now an authenticator that's been in the business for decades. And their watchmakers check every single watch that goes through before that buyer receives it. And if you think about it, since our launch, what's really exciting is because at that time, it was just early days when we first spoke in September. We've now authenticated more than 7,000 luxury watches that are $10,000 and above. So we've seen some strong growth across the board, especially in the $10,000 and above watch category, and in our supply, right? I mean, we have now close to more than 1.2 million daily live listings in the watch category, and it's continuously growing. I mean, Cartier and Rolex are both up 75 and 54% respectively. We've seen a lot of searches for these brands grow. I know we always speak about Rolex, but it's nice to see how other brands are taking off as well.
Can you give me some of the standouts then from the watch sales, like your Pateks, the Rolex, the big ticket items?
Some of the interesting watches that have sold, and look, Patek, Audemars Piguet, Rolex, as always, are all growing, right? But some of the interesting ones that we've actually seen that sold over the last year has been like a Richard Mille Ladies Pink Gold watch, a 31 millimeter watch, RM007, that sold for a little bit over $95,000. We've seen a Patek Nautilus annual calendar moon phase watch sell for close to $85,000. So we are seeing really expensive watches, especially in that $10,000 and above. And one of the most exciting things was since we last spoke, our quarterly earnings weren't out yet. And in Q4 of last year, watches grew 16% year on year. And then take the first quarter of this past year, of the recent year that we're in, first quarter 2021, watches grew 38% year on year. And this is luxury watches greater than $2,000 and more. So we're seeing strength and growth, and that's driven by a lot of these top brands that we just spoke about.
And with the anti-fraud, anti-counterfeiting and authentication that you guys are offering, I take it you've caught quite a few dodgy things trying to get past and stopped some customers ending up on the receiving end of some dodgy fake watches.
We've seen very interesting things through our service center, our authentication center. I mean, both for the buyers as well as the sellers on the return. I'll give you an example first on how we protected a seller. There was a Rolex, I think, worth over $30,000+ that made it past our authentication partner because it was authentic and got it to the buyer. When that buyer opened a return and it comes back through intermediate returns, that watch was not in the box. We call that a rock in the box. And so the seller, on the other hand, old eBay would have had to go back and forth, he said, she said type situation. And this new eBay fully protected the seller. Like, hey, your watch isn't here. Don't worry. Your money's safe. You're going to keep the money. On the buyer side, yeah, like we've caught fakes through our system. But what we're also seeing a lot more of is around, does the watch actually come with the collateral that it was listed with? So for example, if it said it had the original paperwork or the original box, and that original box was in mint condition and not fully damaged, are we seeing that as it comes through? So our authentication partner checks for that as well. We've seen many situations where, hey, the original warranty card, even though it might be expired, was forgotten by the seller. And we save that. We help get that warranty card from the seller before we delivered that watch to the buyer. And so as a buyer, you're now getting a whole experience, right? Because all those little pieces are part of the experience versus on the other hand, them not receiving that. So that's been really exciting and how we're scaling up our authentication program and watches.
That gives a lot of peace of mind, not only if you're looking to sell a watch, but also if you're on the receiving end and you're looking to purchase one. We've seen it in the forums, on the Facebook groups and on Instagram, people having been in the process of buying something through eBay, and then they have managed to avoid a catastrophe because of this new service that you guys have been offering. And I haven't seen anybody, hand on heart, I haven't seen anybody complain about it, only positive things. So well done. And again, you guys had said that you weren't incurring extra charges to people for this. This is part of the eBay service, and it's absolutely fantastic that you're doing that. Now, you guys also had a roadshow, obviously not over here in Scotland, but you did have one over in the States. So how did that go for you?
Maybe one day we'll have a global roadshow, but yeah.
We'll run it for you over here. Just give us a call.
We have a lot in progress coming up in the future. But yeah, it was exciting, right? We launched Authentication Nation not too long ago. And what was exciting about that is we had a series of events in 5 cities across the country, starting in Atlanta, ending up all the way to Austin. So we stopped in Nashville, Seattle, Las Vegas. Some of the interesting highlights to call out is we're partnering up with some of the next generation of influencers. So we partnered up with enthusiasts like Trae Young. He's an NBA star and he grew up loving watches, right? I mean, we had a great video we did where he was buying G-Shock watches when he was young. And now he's buying more expensive collectible watches since he's an NBA star. And so that was in Atlanta. Hunter Hayes, popular country singer, again, expert in watches, that was in Nashville. And the way it worked is local collectors and enthusiasts pulled up to a drive-in eBay authentication station and waited while experts evaluated the item's worth, confirmed authenticity, assessed the value, and they also gained insights into its provenance and stories. And that was really exciting to be able to do that across the nation. And we look forward to doing a lot more different customer experience-driven events as time goes on.
We recently had a couple of police officers from the UK Flying Squad. And for listeners that don't know what that is, if you're not based here in the UK and you haven't heard, it is our, I don't even know what you would compare it to in the States, but it's the people that would make sure that high level fraud, robbery, counterfeiting, those kind of things, they're the police that look after all that. They're the ones in the UK that are allowed to carry firearms where most coppers are not. But they were on the show, did a full hour with us, and they were talking about ways to avoid being robbed, duped, conned, and basically been hoodwinked when it comes to watches, jewelry, and things like that. And they were big supporters of using platforms just like yourself, like eBay, where you're not having to meet somebody in a dark alley, in a car park, and you don't know if you're going to be getting real money or you're going to be robbed at knife point or gunpoint. So they flew the flag for eBay as well, which was fantastic to hear. Any new stuff that you can sort of let us in on that you guys are working on just now that may be coming down the line shortly?
Well, that's really exciting to hear what the story you just said. You don't want to be robbed, and also you don't want to be conned as you shop eBay. And the great thing about what we're doing at eBay is there's real people that are focused only on watches across the organization that wasn't there before. And as a result, you can shop from any of those watches above $2,000, and you know that eBay is going to have your back. And I think that is definitely exciting. A lot more exciting programs to come. I mean, in the last year since we spoke, we've launched escrow services, right? So watches above $10,000 and more, you have an option. You can use your credit card if you want, but you have an option to potentially purchase that Audemars Piguet watch, leveraging wire transfer. Know it's getting held in a third-party escrow. And when the watch is delivered to you, that's when the money's actually going to get released to the seller. So it protects both buyer and sellers on both sides. We launched something like Click to Call, right? And it's in beta still, but it's with a small set of sellers where you can now, on your mobile, click a button on that listing and be able to reach out to an expert at that seller's location and have a conversation with the eBay seller on that specific watch and get more details and stories behind it. And there's a lot more to come, right? I mean, we're driving up supply. We're seeing strong growth of supply. Next month, we're also continuing our investment in social. We're launching our first watch series, something we call Old School versus New School. This is going to be kicking off with style icon Iris Apfel and rap star Little Yachty. And they're going to be bonding over their obsession for watches. And it's all about old school meets new school. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So you'll see a lot more innovation to come both on the site as we continuously battle and get rid of any counterfeits out there. We're working with partners as well as heavy investment in social and further growing the program that we already have in authentication, escrow, and click to call. A lot of excitement to come.
Definitely. Well, it's been a roller coaster ride. from where we started last September to where we are just now and looking forward to the future. And if anybody wants to find out more about what we've spoken about there, be sure to check out the show notes where we will have full details and links. So Tarath, thank you very much for coming on, and we will catch you again soon.
No, thank you for having me. Appreciate it, and I look forward to catching up again soon.
That was some interesting news there from Tarath on used watches, new watches perhaps, but some brand new watches have come out from Audemars Piguet. And you don't like these, but I like at least one of them. What's not to like, Dave?
We've got
one here that looks like a Rainbow Daytona, a little bit, with the frosted. We've got the one I like, although it's a small size, but it's black, which means it's going to look even smaller, is the all-ceramic Royal Oak. But what do you not like about these?
To be honest, I'm not a big... Actually, that's not entirely fair. I'm not a kind of Royal Oak jumbo type. I don't know why, I've just never really particularly liked them. It's not an anti-thing. Probably won't, but
it'll be the Altofonissimo story because of the bracelet.
It could be, but then interestingly, like they do make AP make a watch that I actually really like, and everyone else when it first came out absolutely hated it, which is the Code. And I actually think having seen them in real life, it is an absolutely stunning watch. That one, these ones, like you said, there's two that are kind of would pass general muster with me. The black ceramic one for sure is a not terrible looking watch.
And a not terrible looking watch. Wow,
high praise, you know, stand on a pedestal. The one that, of all of them, if it was a case of you must have one, it would be the frosted gold 34mm, which is the same size as the ceramic one. And I think, albeit 34mm is quite small for a modern watch, it's quite chunky as well, so I think it'll not look 34mm small. I think it'll probably look a little bigger on the wrist than 34mm would indicate. This one's looks like a white gold, and what would normally be on the bracelet, you would normally have the satin and the polished links. That's all a kind of frosted texture, so it looks like it's been sandblasted or some kind of technique that's got that frosting on it. It's still got the brushed case edge and the kind of fluted or the edging between that's polished. Then on the bezel, you've got the polished edges, but the flat surface between the knot screws is kind of frosted as well. It's got a really nice, I think they call it, is it icy blue or something along that is. So it's got a kind of a grand tapestry dial effect, very classic AP, and it's in this kind of light blue PVD coat that they've put on it. That one's quite a classy. It's not. I don't find that watch classy, but I find it quite utilitarian. But it's quite a nice looking version of it. That one.
It's Peugeot 206 blue.
You say 206. I'm thinking also the 306 and the 306 GTI had that came in that color, didn't it? That really light. Yeah, just it was almost like a silvery blue color. That one. That was a cracking looking watch. I haven't seen the price of it. I'm guessing it will be eye wateringly expensive. Of course it will. The rest of them, frankly, are just like Bobby Dazzler specials that look like you've come right out of the barrows. You know, they'll be beautifully made. When you handle it, it will be absolutely gorgeous as a watch in terms of build, finish, etc., etc. And I'm going to guess these ones have got the new calibers in them, or the kind of updated calibers.
Well, the blue one you're talking about is the Cal 5800, which has got 50 hours of power reserve. So it's still lagging a little bit behind everybody else.
But it's better than it was, isn't it?
It's better than it was. Yeah, you can actually use it without it breaking.
You can go for more than like a day and a night out without not having any idea what time it is.
We don't recommend running. Jogging is now okay.
Yeah, as I say, so, you know, cool. Lots of folk like them, and, you know, it's one of these watches that's joined the kind of halcyon leagues of, you know, the Pateks and the you know, Rolex sports models and things that you just basically can't get. You know, none of these are going to be sitting in windows and you can just walk in and point and go, here, I've got lots of money, can I buy it? It's going to be, you can maybe be considered to join a list at some point in the next 25 millennia. But, you know, good for them if they get it. But yeah, cool. Nice watches.
So there we go. We've had a couple of guests pop in to say hello, and it's time to try and put the lid back on the genie that is the timepiece gentleman. Because after all the shenanigans of the last couple of weeks, he did come back with a video on Tuesday, as promised. And personally, I thought it was a shit show. It was over an hour. It was very much bleeding heart and retconning what happened. So the basic premise of what he said in his video was that they had decided to go and have a blackout with their company, not only on social media, but their website. They pulled all their stock from Chrono 24, blah, blah, blah. And the reason they did that was to show, I can't even remember what it was to show something like we use social media too much, even though social media is what has propelled this guy and his company to where it is just now. And they were going to utilize that time off to go and do charitable work, volunteer work at different organizations. And how dare us, how dare all of us think that he had done a runner or something nefarious had happened, because all he was doing was charity work. Now the problem is, now he's deleted the video, so you can't go and check it out, although I do have a downloaded copy, naturally. The problem is, halfway through the video he deleted, when they are at one of these charitable organisations and they're explaining to the woman that's in charge there about what's going on, they're making out as if that was at the start of the blackout. But when they're explaining why they're there, they say something along the lines of, have you seen all the hullabaloo on social media about what we've done? Now, the hullabaloo came a day or 2 days after they did the blackout. So they've obviously went, oh shit, us going dark has caused a real problem. People think we've done a runner. Oh shit, how do we fix this? Ah, quick, right, everybody, grab your stuff. We're going down to the charity place. We're going to do some charity stuff. We're going to film it. We're going to cut a video together. Pretend we did that days ago. That was the original plan. And boo to you for thinking that we've done anything wrong.
Hi, guys.
Awesome. I'll explain to you what we're doing. We're pulling a PR stunt on our business, and it is a tremendous risk, but we did it with a cause. Okay, we're giving back to charity. We're highlighting charities that we picked. We're taking the time off. There's news articles floating around right now saying we ran off with millions of dollars.
Oh, there is? Yeah. That's great. That's great PR for you guys. Yeah.
So that was the narrative of the video. And then they said they were going to be doing some charity work and they were going to be doing this and doing that and donating X, Y, Z, and they were going to do an auction. I'd never seen those guys do any charity work up until that moment. That's interesting. Unlike Red Bar, that's a charitable organisation, or various things that we've done at Scottish Watches and various things that loads of brands that we know do all the time. But hey, I could be wrong. But the comments section went on fire on that video. It had something like 5,000 dislikes to 4,000 likes before it got deleted. Thousands and thousands of comments and people just calling them out for it being a load of pish. What were your thoughts when you saw it?
I can sum it up real quickly. Horse shit. It's just, I mean, watching it, you were watching a master of manipulation, narcissism, self-aggrandizing, look at me, all of the textbooks things that are exhibits of what the very worst of people out there do is exactly what he was doing. It was all about, look at me, look what we've done. We're amazing. You should all be thanking us. How dare you question us? Yada, yada, yada. You know, just absolutely no humility, no nothing. There was nothing good about it. Sometimes there's people out there make mistakes and they try and bullshit their way out of it and they try and, you know, kind of weasel their way out, but there's still a kind of undertone of some form of kind of feeling of sorriness in there or realizing that they've done something wrong, and they'll maybe try and not just come out and say, basically, we royally upped and we're sorry. But none of them, there wasn't even a hint, there was no remorse in there at all. They didn't think they did anything wrong, and they were more upset that people were upset that they did something wrong. You know, it was just pathetic. But you know, it didn't really come as a surprise, to be honest with us, you know, hey ho. But then it's moved on from there as well. So have you seen where it's moved on to from that point?
I have indeed. But before we get to that, I've got a couple of things to say, as you probably expect.
I will sit back and I will get relaxed.
Okay. Go. So before the videos got deleted, I obviously went and downloaded it, took some screen captures of some of the comments, because the Watch fam, you guys out there listening to this, you are educated. Mm-hmm. It's a scene, a community, and an industry that intelligent people seem to gravitate towards. And the fact Anthony thought he could pull the wool over everyone's eyes and get out of it, it beggars belief. But I did a little bit of research, and this all kicked off maybe, a week, 2 weeks ago now, looking at the history of the Timepiece Gentleman's YouTube channel. It was meteoric rise. We talked about it early on. We talked about it again later on. And looking at the figures, what seems to have happened is in April, they had 1.5 million views in a month. May, they hit 3 million views on their videos in a month. June, this has taken like month, first of the month, each month. June, 2.1 million down from 3, and in July 1.5. So it's gone up, it's peaked, and it's roller coasted back down. Same with new subscribers. April 16,000, May 30,000, June 21,000, July 7,000. So it's gone up and it's come down, and they've obviously went, oh shit, we need to pull a stunt, we need some kind of marketing thing, what can we do? And they came up with this. And the reason that people haven't been watching as much, or perhaps looking as much, is they started to put out too much content. It used to be 45 minutes to 1 hour a week. It was like a TV show. I looked forward to seeing what they were up to. It was condensed. It was the best of the week. Then it stretched out to two episodes, an hour and a half each. So suddenly it goes from 1 hour to potentially 3 hours a week. Far too much. And I clicked out. So did a lot of people. They just couldn't be bothered, which is why when they disappeared, I didn't really know what had been happening because I hadn't been paying attention. Lots of things in their video, the big video that got deleted, including that the banks froze their accounts, and they claimed that was because people on social media had on social media said, oh, they've disappeared. Banks don't usually close your account if you disappear off Instagram. Usually there's something a little bit more going on behind the scenes there. And part of the video where he was basically lambasting all the followers and the people saying they've done a runner, saying, how dare you? All we did was do charity work. One of the big things they did was they didn't just go dark on their social media, which is what they claimed. You know, they said, well, what happens when people go on like holiday for a week from their business? Well, they don't remove their website and they don't scrape their name off the window of their premises. And when he said that he did that, he tried to explain it around that, oh, well, we've got a new graphic coming. Well, see, when a new graphic is ordered, you wait until it arrives before you remove the sign from your building. That's generally the way you did it. So
it was just bullshit.
Absolute shite. Left, right, and centre. And the comments, I mean, I'll put some in the show notes, but some guy said about doing the charity work, Al Capone ran a soup kitchen during the Great Depression. Get over yourself. Lots of things like that. Throwing the charity thing in there to save face as a shield, that was just horrific. Really, really poor taste.
Oh, it absolutely is. That's the classic, it's the classic deflection technique is a makeup, something that sounds good. The people who truly give to charity don't go around shouting about I've given to charity. You know, if you're organizing something for charity, you might talk about it, but you know, the people who are the people who spend the money or donate the money, and businesses, as you say, businesses do it all the time. They don't run about telling folk they're doing it. So yeah, just nonsense, absolute nonsense.
Now, he deleted the video.
He did.
Then today a new video went up. And this was one of the biggest PR nothing burger videos I have seen in a good long time. He spent about 10-15 minutes apologising without saying sorry or telling you what he was apologising for. Now, you watched this on the plane, was it? On the way back up to Scotland?
I viewed this video. In fact, do you know, that's actually not true. I didn't view it. I put it on and I put the phone in my pocket because I was like, I just didn't want to sit looking at it. I just listened to it. So I listened to the whole, his whole nothingness, and that's all it was. It was nothingness. All it struck me as of
I'm sorry I got caught.
That's exactly what I was going to say. This reminds me of when you were a kid, right, and your parents or your mother or whatever caught you out doing something, and your mother would be like, say sorry, and you said sorry. No, say sorry like you mean you say sorry, the classic sorry. It was a petted lip kind of scalded child saying sorry. For me, there was no remorse. He didn't mean sorry. As you said, he was sorry he got caught, or he's sorry that his grand plan wasn't as grand as he thought it was, and that it's all backfired. It's self-pity. He's sorry because his business is basically flushing down the toilet by his own doing. He's sorry that people are calling him out for what he is, and he's sorry that basically folk have realised he's just he's a fraud. The whole thing, and I don't mean that in the sense of he's defrauding people, but he's just a fraud. It's all rubbish. Nothing about it rang true. I'm no psychologist, but just listening to it, he didn't identify what he was saying sorry for. He was just sorry, which straight away for me was a red flag. And then it was just, he kept using phrases like, I can't ask you to forgive me, but I want you to forgive me. No, that sentence should have finished at, I can't ask you to forgive me, end of sentence. You don't then follow it up with, but I hope you will, and I think you should, because that's basically what he was saying. So again, it was just more narcissism, it was more self-aggrandizing, more standing in a soapbox, but it looked to me, like almost his last throw the dart or whatever it is, because there's still people defending him. There's still people saying, oh, he put a sorry video out. He's so sorry. As far as I'm concerned, I'm sure there'll be more to come in this story, but I'm bored of it now. I think most folk who have got any form of decency are bored of it now. So let's see what happens over the next few weeks. He'll either try to come up with another grand plan or he'll just slowly fade into the distance.
Hopefully the end of that saga. I can't see that going anywhere else. I mean, that video he put up today is already roughly parity of thousands of dislikes versus likes. If it was me and I'd made such an arse of things, which thankfully I can't recollect to have ever done in life, but if I was, I would stand up and say, right, okay, that was a PR stunt. We shouldn't have done it, and we shouldn't have tried to cover our arse with the whole charity aspect and say, you know, that's why we did it, because that was disingenuous. We are sorry we tried that. We panicked. We just didn't like what was going on. It was going to disrupt our business. That's our livelihood. We put so much blood, sweat and tears into this. We just were spiraling and we didn't know what to do. And that's what we came up with when we were brainstorming to try and fix the situation. It was ill-advised and we're sorry we did that. We just didn't think. I think that would have got them out of the, wouldn't have got them out of the hole that they dug for themselves. But at least it would have been honest, and they would have apologised for what they did instead of a, well, I'm sorry, what are you sorry for? Well, everything.
Yeah.
I watched the video that then got deleted as things were kicking off between Roman, Eric, Adrian and Nico. And Nico was not happy during that live broadcast about what happened. He was pissed off because it does rub off. Roman was absolutely raging because he spent a week fielding calls from people saying, where's Anthony? Where's Anthony? Where's Anthony? He's trying to sell watches. He runs a business. He's not a YouTuber. And Eric was really, really pissed off because the same thing happened. He's a one-man band starting out after being at CRM and he was not entertaining this at all. It was detrimental to not only his business, but his association with the Timepiece Gentleman, and the knock-on effect of people being a bit cagey about, oh, these YouTuber watch dealer guys, are they maybe all the same? Mm-hmm. So, and even in Anthony's video that he deleted, the big long hour one with the charity stuff in, he said, oh, you know, Eric was really happy with what we did. Look at this video. Roland was really happy. Absolute shite. So it's just full of pack of lies, and it's unfortunate because it had the makings of something decent. They were going against the grain. They were doing the disrupting the industry thing, showing you the behind the scenes of watch dealing. I think the fame just went to his head. The popularity, the 100%. View count, the subscriber, it was going through the roof.
He believed his own bullshit.
He was enjoying the hype train. He saw the charts as much as I did. I mean, no one else. This is another thing. There's lots of podcasters, bloggers, pseudo journalists, YouTubers, etc., that like to just report on the reporting. They need to start looking deeper. Looking deeper, you can find out potential reasons why this has come to be. And those charts that I've got, they'll put in the show notes, that show this up, down PR stunt. That was probably the reason. I reckon that is the reason that this all kicked off, and it was ill-advised. But there we go. So that's that. And that is the end of a show. And hopefully we won't have to speak about this shit ever again.
Indeed.
Right. Well, thank you for listening, guys. We're going to cut this one off just now because it is running too long. But Dave, it's always a pleasure. And we will catch you guys again soon.
Au revoir.